Welcome back to the Weekly Docket, where I recap the headlines in true crime from the week. Now, before we dive in, please make sure you're following Mama Mystery if you're listening on Apple or Spotify. Usually it's like a little bell or a little button that says follow. This way you never miss a future episode, and it does help me out, and it costs you nothing. So just go do it. Okay, thanks. Let's get started with this week. We've got like a variety of stories, and this first one, you might have seen me talk about this on social media this week, but it is insane. This girl out of Scotland basically faked her entire pregnancy. Now, we've heard of people faking pregnancies, but trying to pass a reborn baby doll off as your actual newborn baby is kind of a new level of delusion. It's really taking it that extra step. And I can't help but wonder how far she was actually going to go with this. So earlier this year, 23-year-old Kira Cousins from North Lanarkshire, Scotland, informed her boyfriend, Jamie Gardner, along with family and friends, that she was expecting a baby. By all accounts, Kira appeared genuinely pregnant, and over the coming months, she shared sonogram scan images, staged positive pregnancy test photos, and even wore a convincing fake pregnancy bump to mimic the physical progression of pregnancy. She frequently updated those around her about her typical pregnancy woes, texting friends about constant nausea and fatigue, all to reinforce this ruse. And at no point did anyone suspect that it was a hoax. As one acquaintance later remarked, everyone believed Kira during this period. Not even Jamie, the baby's supposed father-to-be, caught on that anything was even amiss. So all the usual milestones of pregnancy were carefully faked. Kira reportedly obtained ultrasound scan pictures, and it's unclear if they were doctored or if they were taken from the internet. And she just proudly showed them off as proof of her baby's growth. She also posted videos on social media purportedly showing the baby kicking in her womb. And in reality, these quote-unquote kicks were simulated. Later, onlookers noted that Kira's recorded baby kick looked suspiciously like she was just jostling a memory foam belly prop to imitate movement. And there's actually a video of this online, so if you check out my Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok, there should be a pretty lengthy video where I tell this whole story, but I include a lot more images, and then, of course, video of this belly kicking, whatever, that she posted. Now, during this time, Kira made sure to keep others at a distance whenever possible. She attended prenatal appointments alone, always finding excuses for why Jamie or her family could not accompany her. And if somebody asked to feel the baby bump or later to even hold the baby, Kira would refuse. She always had a convenient excuse ready, protecting the lie at all costs. By the midway point of this supposed pregnancy, Kira amped up the theatrics with a full gender reveal party. Both her family and Jamie's family gathered to celebrate in a festive scene complete with colored smoke cannons, balloons, and cake. Kira announced that they were expecting a baby girl who she had already named Bonnie Lee. As the due date grew closer, Kira added a dramatic twist to her story. She told everyone that doctors had discovered her unborn baby had a serious heart defect, described as a hole in its heart. Now, this news elicited an outpouring of sympathy and concern. Kira posted frequent updates about supposed medical appointments and scares related to the baby's heart condition. Family and friends rallied around with not only emotional support, but even more material support. Many people bought them gifts and baby supplies for Kira, not only out of excitement, but now also out of compassion for the challenges that she claimed to be facing. Over the summer, she amassed piles of baby clothes, toys, and even an expensive pram or stroller valued around £1,000. And all of this was kindly gifted by loved ones who believed her. Then on October 10th, Kira informed her family that she had gone into labor and given birth in the middle of the night, supposedly all alone. She claimed the delivery was sudden and that she had managed without any help. In fact, Kira even shared photos appearing to show her leaving the hospital with newborn Bonnie Lee in an infant car seat. Astonishingly, even this was fabricated. The newborn baby in the car seat was actually a lifelike reborn doll. Kira had acquired an incredibly realistic baby doll to serve as Bonnie Lee, complete with a pacifier and swaddling blanket to impersonate a real infant. And she was posting pictures all over her social media. She brought this doll home, passing it off as her healthy newborn daughter. In the first day or two after her quote-unquote birth, Kira just continued the charade. She sent around pictures of the newborn doll and even told one cousin via text that baby Bonnie Lee had arrived safely, making the whole family so happy at first. However, observers later noted some odd behavior. Kira never let anyone else hold or closely examine the infant, citing the baby's fragility or her own protective instincts. The doll was remarkably detailed and could easily look like a sleeping newborn at just a glance, but it obviously did not move or make any sounds. Within a couple of days, Kira's mother grew suspicious. According to later accounts, Kira's mom entered her daughter's room and noticed something was profoundly wrong, that baby Bonnie Lee was motionless and silent. And this was highly unusual for a days-old infant, obviously. Additionally, Kira's extreme protectiveness, never allowing anyone to pick up or feed the baby, had already struck the family as odd. There was even one time when a family member went to remove the blanket from the baby's feet to look at her feet, and Kira jumped on the blanket, essentially like hurriedly putting the blanket back in its place because she didn't want anyone actually examining this baby doll. So her mom found the realistic reborn doll hidden among Kira's things and immediately realized that Bonnie Lee did not actually exist as a real child. The elaborate pregnancy and birth had all been an elaborate lie. Multiple sources indicate that before the family fully caught on, Kira had attempted to conclude her hoax by claiming that the baby had died. She had informed Jamie, the baby's father, via a text message that their newborn daughter, Bonnie Lee, had tragically passed away, ostensibly due to that heart defect. In other words, as soon as the baby was born, Kira invented a sudden death to avoid having to actually produce a living infant for any length of time. And so now you see this like methodical planning on her part by saying, oh, well, if I give this fake pregnancy a heart defect, then that'll explain how I can wrap this all up in a nice little bow, right? And just move on. Well, Jamie, who had been kept away from all prenatal appointments and even the birth itself, was heartbroken and stunned. This cruel lie was delivered before Jamie really even got a chance to spend time with this baby. There is a picture of him holding the doll and it's like heavily swaddled in blankets, kind of like, you know, if you go visit a brand new baby at a hospital and they just kind of pass around this big football of a blanket. And that is essentially what Jamie got to experience. But beyond that, any changing of diapers, any feeding of bottles, anything like that, it was all stolen from Jamie. Now, Kira's attempt to end the saga with a fabricated infant death obviously failed, likely because her mother discovered the doll around the same time. And once the deception was laid bare, the news spread rapidly. Feeling utterly betrayed and angry, Kira's relatives decided to actually publicize this entire story as a cautionary tale. Around October 13th to 15th, Kira's cousin, Nave McRoberts, took to TikTok to recount the entire saga. In a viral video, Nave explained how Kira had faked everything from bump to birth and how the family discovered the reborn doll hidden in Kira's home. The video is quite long and it's a little bit hard to understand her because she does have a pretty thick Scottish accent, but multiple acquaintances alleged that this was not her first hoax. Reportedly, Kira had even faked having cancer in an earlier episode, which had also drawn sympathy until it was debunked. And overall, the public reaction kind of oscillated between outrage, ridicule, and concern for Kira's mental health. According to family reports, Kira left her home and went to stay with her father at a different location, essentially going into hiding once the hoax became common knowledge. For days after being exposed, Kira remained silent in public. Then on October 19th, she finally broke her silence and posted a short video on TikTok, but the video is only text. And she basically addressed the situation. Without fully excusing herself, Kira hinted at underlying issues, saying in part, quote, "While I'm not condoning any behavior led by myself, I'd like to clear some things up. My family sat me down and asked me what had happened earlier in my pregnancy, which I will come out and address when I'm ready," end quote. Now, this cryptic remark suggests that there may have been an initial real pregnancy or a trauma. For example, maybe she was pregnant and miscarried, or maybe this was all a psychological crisis that just spiraled into the extended hoax, though she did not yet reveal those details. She also added, "Don't for 1 minute think they let me get away with any of this. They haven't," end quote, indicating that her loved ones have confronted her and are insisting she face consequences and get help. As far as consequences go, I don't know that she'll be able to really be held that accountable. I mean, I'm sure that the people who gifted her those items could possibly sue her. I mean, I don't know what the laws are in Scotland, but I mean, she essentially committed fraud by eliciting donations from people under this guise of a fake pregnancy. As for the baby, it's been reported that she is safe and back in the custody of Timu. On to the next story. The night of July 6, 2024 started like many would for 36-year-old Sonia Massey. She believed someone was lurking around her home near Springfield, Illinois, so she did what many would. She called 911, and what followed would instead become one of the most disturbing cases of an armed deputy killing an unarmed woman inside of her own house. In the early hours of July 6th, Sonia Massey checked outside her residence and, worried by something she had observed, she dialed 911 to report suspicious activity. Two deputies from the Sangamon County Sheriff's Office responded, including Sean P. Grayson. After a search of the area and her property turned up nothing amiss, the deputies contacted Massey at her front door and then entered her home to continue their assessment. As they moved through the home, one of the deputies asked for her identification. They also asked her to turn off a burner on her stove, saying they didn't want a fire to start while they were there. So Massey complied. She turned off the burner, picked up a pot of water, and rinsed it at the sink. Well, around that moment, tensions escalated quickly and violently. Body camera footage shows Grayson backing away from the pot of hot water, expressing fear of being scalded. Massey let out a small laugh and said, "Aw, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus." Grayson responded sharply, "Huh?" And Massey repeated, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus." And then Grayson snapped, saying, quote, "You better fucking not, or I swear to God I'll fucking shoot you in the fucking face," end quote. Massey flinched, dropped the pot, raised her hands, and ducked behind a kitchen counter. She apologized, saying, "I'm sorry," and yet Grayson, gun drawn, advanced. He shouted, "Drop the effing pot," and the other deputy also drew his weapon. Body cam shows Massey possibly holding the pot above her head, and then without further warning, Grayson fired three shots. One struck Massey in the face. As she laid motionless, bleeding, Grayson reportedly told his partner not to grab a medical kit, saying, "She's done." The other deputy ignored him, rendered aid, and stayed with Massey until EMS arrived. She was later pronounced dead at St. John's Hospital, the same hospital where Grayson's fiance worked as a nurse practitioner. From the moment the footage was released on July 22nd, the case ignited outrage. The fact that Massey was Black, unarmed, and in her own home after calling for help made this not just a local tragedy, but part of the national conversation on policing and race. And on the heels of this new documentary that's out on Netflix, if you haven't seen it yet, I would implore you to do so, but it's called The Perfect Neighbor. And it reminds me a lot of this in this case, but it will infuriate you, so I will warn you, and maybe we can talk about it next week, so I'll give you all a chance to watch it, and then we can kind of talk about it. But back to this story. So Grayson was fired from the sheriff's office less than 2 weeks after the shooting. A grand jury indicted him on three counts of first-degree murder, plus aggravated battery with a firearm and official misconduct. The case also exposed troubling hiring practices. It emerged that Grayson had worked for multiple agencies in a short period, had DUI convictions from his time in the Army, and had been involved in prior misconduct. So experts say that those red flags should have prevented him from being rehired in law enforcement the way he was. In February of 2025, Massey's family accepted a $10 million settlement from Sangamon County. While the settlement isn't a criminal verdict, it signaled institutional acknowledgement of wrongdoing. And given the large media coverage and intense local interest, a judge ordered a change of venue, so Grayson's trial will be held in the Peoria County Courthouse instead of Sangamon County. Jury selection kicked off earlier this week, and I will keep you guys up to date on this trial and the outcome. He does face a possible sentence of 45 years to life in prison if he is convicted of first-degree murder. Have you ever felt like no matter how much you rest, you're still just running on empty? Fatigue, brain fog, even brittle nails, those can all be signs of iron deficiency. And here's the thing, iron deficiency is way more common than people realize. It affects about 1 in 3 adults, especially women, and traditional iron supplements usually don't cut it. They're hard to absorb, and they often leave you dealing with nausea, constipation, or a metallic-y taste. That's why I recommend Citerol from PharmaNutra. Citerol is a premium iron supplement made with patented sucrosomial technology, which basically wraps the iron in a protective shield so your body can absorb it 3 to 4 times better than standard iron. And the best part is it's gentle on the stomach. There's no nausea, no constipation, and no metallic taste. Citerol has been clinically studied, over 150 published studies, in fact, and it's trusted by more than 2 million people worldwide. It's Italy's number one supplement brand and is finally available here in the U.S. Just one capsule a day with water anytime, with or without food, and you're good to go. So if you're nodding along because you're exhausted, foggy, or just tired of feeling tired, this could be exactly what you've been missing. Head to pharmanutra-us.com and use the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, for 10% off your first order of Citerol. That's pharmanutra-us.com with the code MAMA, M-A-M-A, for 10% off today. Have you heard of Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth? It's the supplement designed to help women maintain optimal hormone levels. With more than 50,000 glowing reviews worldwide and 98% of women saying that they would recommend it to their friends and family, it's clear why it's such a fan favorite. And now you can take those results even further with their prebiotic collagen protein. This product is all about supporting your gut health, which directly impacts your hormones. When your gut is in balance, it can really amplify the benefits of Hormone Harmony. So here's what it helps with. It helps with relieving occasional bloating and gas, check. Reducing sugar cravings so you feel satisfied longer, definitely need that. Supporting healthy, sustainable weight management, which is something I have always struggled with. And boosting energy and supporting general well-being. Again, I think all moms can probably relate to basically all of those symptoms. But personally, I've noticed that adding prebiotic collagen protein to my routine made a big difference. It's given me more energy during the day and just an overall feeling of balance, like I'm not on this wild roller coaster of hormonal imbalance. And what I really like about Happy Mammoth is their commitment to quality. Their products are inspired by nature, but backed by science, and they never cut corners. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, at checkout. Just go to happymammoth.com and use the code MAMA for 15% off today. All right, for our next story, do you guys remember that couple from the Coldplay concert that got caught in a pretty public way having an affair? Well, a new couple out of Georgia saw that and said, hold my beer, basically. So Dr. Melanie Needler Litt is a 52-year-old, well-respected dentist from Marietta, Georgia. A top graduate of Tufts University School of Dental Medicine in 1999, she completed a residency at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital and is a member of the American Dental Association and Georgia Dental Association. She has lived in Marietta since 2004 with her husband, Leslie, or Les Litt, and the couple has a son who is currently away at college. Now, Dr. Litt practiced at multiple dental offices in the metro Atlanta area, including Family Dentistry at Seven Hills in Dallas, Georgia. Colleagues and patients knew her as a dedicated professional. One former patient described her as an incredible person in online discussions. Now, prior to October of 2025, Dr. Litt had no public history of incidents or legal issues, and she was looking forward to a planned dream vacation to Japan with her husband in mid-October. Well, on October 13th, it was a Monday, and Dr. Melanie Litt was last seen on this day, according to police. She worked a normal shift that day at a dental office on Villa Rica Way in Marietta, and nothing seemed amiss to colleagues. Notably, she left behind her powered-off cell phone in her work bag near the front door of her house and took her vehicle and wallet with her. The next day, when Dr. Litt failed to show up for work at the Seven Hills Dental Office in Dallas, Georgia that morning, her colleagues grew alarmed. Coworkers were unable to contact her and requested a police welfare check at her Marietta home. Cobb County police officers responded, and with permission from Dr. Litt's husband, who was out of town on business at the time, entered the home. Inside, they found Melanie's cell phone that had been powered off in her bag and noted that her car and wallet were missing, but saw no signs of struggle or foul play. Her valuables, including her wedding ring and passport, were found secured in a safe, suggesting that she had left intentionally without those items. Dr. Litt's husband, Leslie, rushed back to Atlanta upon learning that his wife was missing and met officers at the house later that day. Police officially categorized Dr. Litt as a missing person on October 14th, and her husband filed a missing persons report with Cobb County Police. The disappearance was described as highly unusual, and friends and family began spreading the word on social media, hoping for leads. Missing persons flyers and Facebook posts described her as 5'1", blonde and blue-eyed, and noted that her last known location might have been in the Marietta or Kennesaw area. Then throughout last week, an intensive search for Melanie was underway. Cobb County police detectives actively investigated the case, but publicly stated that they had no evidence of foul play, a somewhat puzzling stance given that her car was found abandoned. In fact, police were careful in their public updates, noting that Melanie's disappearance was not yet deemed suspicious. Meanwhile, friends and family continued to plead for her safe return on social platforms. By around October 15th, investigators found Melanie's car parked in a large retail parking lot off of Barrett Parkway in Cobb County. Inside the vehicle, nothing immediately alarming was reported. However, the fact that it was dropped in a public lot suggested to some that Melanie might have transferred to another vehicle or planned to rendezvous with someone there. By October 17th, local news outlets had picked up the story of the missing Cobb County dentist. Meanwhile, friends described Dr. Litt as a devoted mother and professional who would, quote, never disappear on her own, end quote, under normal circumstances. It also emerged that Leslie Litt, Melanie's husband, had been out of state traveling when she vanished, which initially led to speculation about his possible absence or involvement. Some online commenters even questioned if the husband truly had an alibi, underscoring just how little information the public had at this point. So with 2 full days passing and no contact from Melanie, concern and media attention escalated. Cobb County Police maintained they had no indication of foul play and believed that Melanie was not in immediate danger, though they did not explain the basis for that belief. And then by the weekend, October 18th, which was Saturday, with Dr. Litt missing for 4 days, police broadened the alert. Cobb County PD issued a renewed Be on the Lookout, or BOLO, bulletin for Melanie on Saturday. Despite growing fears, police reiterated there were still no signs of an abduction or harm, and this official stance would make many ask questions. But unbeknownst to her family and friends, Melanie was not abducted or in danger at that time. In fact, the evening Dr. Litt went missing, evidence suggests that she met up with Anthony Nestor. In fact, investigators later determined that the last known ping from Anthony's cell phone before it was turned off placed him at Dr. Litt's residence on the night of October 13th. Sometime after work, Dr. Litt left her home voluntarily to go be with Anthony, and she was allegedly leaving to continue her relationship with him. Now, Anthony Nestor is a resident of Kennesaw, Georgia. He and his wife, yes, his wife, Melissa Nestor, were longtime dental patients of Dr. Litt. Little is known publicly about Anthony's profession or personal life before now, but it emerged that he did have at least one run-in with the law in January of 2025. He was booked in Cobb County for driving with a suspended license, and it was his first offense. By all accounts, the Nestors were family acquaintances of Dr. Litt through the dental practice. Then this month, Melissa discovered evidence that an illicit relationship between Dr. Litt and Anthony had been going on for over 10 years, indicating that the affair likely began around 2015, shortly after her and her husband became patients of Melanie's. This long-term affair remained entirely hidden from their families and the public during that period. So, if we back up just a little bit, 2 days before Melanie went missing on Saturday, October 11th, Anthony Nestor disappeared from his home in Kennesaw. He told his wife that he was going out to hang out with the guys that evening, and then he just never returned home. Melissa Nestor became concerned, and by the next day, she reported her 44-year-old husband missing to authorities. Melissa later told a journalist that this was the first indication that anything was even amiss. Until then, she had no knowledge of her husband's plans to leave. In the days immediately following Anthony's disappearance, Melissa searched his computer for clues, and she uncovered a secret Yahoo email account of Anthony's, through which she found emails revealing an affair between Anthony and Dr. Litt. To her shock, the correspondence indicated that the affair had been going on for a decade. Even more devastating, Melissa realized that both she and her husband had been Dr. Litt's patients throughout that entire time. So the betrayal, I'm sure, was just too much. The discovery connected Anthony's sudden disappearance with Dr. Litt, though it was not yet public knowledge. The car's location, roughly midway between Marietta and Kennesaw, in hindsight, was a critical clue linking the two missing persons cases, though this link was not public at the time. So Melissa Nestor had informed investigators of the affair after her discovery, which likely shifted the case from a potential crime to just a sensitive domestic matter. Still, from the public's perspective, though, a beloved dentist and mother had vanished without explanation right before she's supposed to go on vacation with her husband, and volunteer search efforts and social media outreach just intensified over the weekend. Then on October 19th, around noon, Dr. Melanie Litt was spotted in public, alive and apparently unharmed, by an eagle-eyed bystander. Billy Robertson, a Cobb County resident who had been one of Melanie's dental patients years ago, he had happened to see a woman that he thought resembled the missing dentist outside the town center at Cobb Mall in Marietta. Melanie was not alone. She was accompanied by an adult male. And sensing something was off, Robertson approached and asked the woman if she was a dentist who had once removed his wisdom teeth. And this question visibly startled her. When Melanie hesitated to engage, Billy immediately dialed 911 to report a sighting of the missing person. Cobb County Police arrived quickly and intercepted Dr. Litt and the man she was with in a vehicle in the mall parking lot. And what happened next was partly captured on Robertson's cell phone video from a distance. In the footage, Melanie appears kind of dazed and nervous, and she seems like really paranoid. She's looking around. She notices that Robertson is filming her, and she quickly takes her hair and like shoves it all in front of her face to try and hide her face, and then hides behind the man she's with. At that point, the police officer that's talking to them tells the guy that is filming to, you know, go away, but he doesn't actually legally have to since they're in a public space. So he continues, but you don't hear anything else of what they're saying. So he ended up posting this video to social media and Facebook, and later wrote in a post, quote, "I confronted them. She was so scared, and I asked if she was okay, and then the male grabbed her and took off with her. So I gave chase." End quote. Now, the man, who we know now is Anthony Nestor, allegedly tried to justify his flight by claiming that her husband was after them. But regardless, thanks to Billy Robertson's intervention, police managed to pull the couple over and separate them for questioning. Officers soon confirmed that the woman was indeed Dr. Melanie Nadler Litt, ending the 5-day search. Both individuals were taken in for interviews, but crucially, no one was under arrest. This was not a kidnapping, but it was a consensual, if not really dramatic, rendezvous. At roughly noon, Cobb County Police officially announced that Dr. Litt had been located safe and canceled the missing person alert. Authorities emphasized that Melanie was not in any danger and there is no indication of foul play. They've had to say that so many times. They declined to release details of where she had been or with whom, citing privacy. But obviously, with Billy Robertson's video on social media, everyone who plays armchair detectives just kind of put it all together. In initial press statements, they also did not name Anthony Nestor, referring to him simply as another individual, or they just didn't refer to him at all. Once his identity was confirmed by police, the missing persons case for Anthony Nestor that was filed on October 12th was likewise closed. Neither Melanie nor Anthony was physically harmed, and police confirmed that both had willingly left their homes. Investigators found further evidence corroborating their affair. Melanie's black Lexus had been found abandoned near Anthony's neighborhood days earlier, and then conversely, Anthony's phone had last pinged near Melanie's home, indicating some sort of swap or meeting. By Sunday evening, the mystery of the disappearance was solved, but a scandal was just beginning to unfold. Ultimately, neither Dr. Litt nor Mr. Nestor have been charged with any crime since their actions, while ethically dubious, were not illegal. Both reportedly cooperated with police interviews and then were released to their families. Now, as the affair story broke, the families involved began addressing the fallout. So that Monday, Leslie Litt, who is Melanie's husband, made a public Facebook post that took many by surprise. In his statement, he claimed, quote, "My wife is scared of the man she's with," and asserted that Melanie was suffering from a mental health crisis requiring professional help. He implored the public not to blame her and suggested that her actions were not entirely under her control. Observers noted that this post came after it was already known she was found unharmed with a longtime lover, and the reaction on social media was pretty skeptical. Many suspected Leslie's post was an attempt to control the narrative and mitigate embarrassment. Commenters pointed out that framing Melanie as, quote unquote, not in her right mind could be a way to excuse her behavior or preserve her reputation. Indeed, social media users have since come to discredit the post as a manufactured effort to quell the humiliation of the decade-long affair. Leslie Litt soon took down or locked his post or made his profile private after they began circulating in forums, but not before screenshots were taken, of course. Going forward, Dr. Melanie Litt's professional life may also face repercussions. The fact that she was engaged in a decade-long sexual relationship with a patient and reportedly continued treating both Anthony and Melissa during that time certainly raises ethical questions. The Georgia Board of Dentistry's Code of Conduct could view such as a dual relationship as unprofessional, potentially leading to an inquiry or disciplinary action, though no statement has been made on this yet. Locally, the community of patients and colleagues has been left reeling. Dr. Litt had been considered a pillar of her community, a married mother and healthcare professional who people entrusted with their care, and now some feel like that trust has been broken. Despite the anger and sensationalism, it's worth noting that this case ended with everyone alive and safe, which is an outcome far better than many missing persons cases. The Cobb County Police Department thanked the public for their concern and noted the outpouring of assistance during the search. Billy Robertson, the Good Samaritan who spotted Melanie, became something of a local hero. He humbly told reporters he was glad he was in the right place at the right time to help, and if not for his recognition, the situation might have dragged on longer or ended differently. Now, in my personal opinion, for what it's worth, I feel like this story reminds me a lot of not only Sherry Papini, but also Lori Vallow Daybell. And I'll explain. So obviously Sherry Papini faked her own disappearance. We all know that, despite the bullshit documentary she came out with, spewing this fantastical narrative of, you know, it didn't make sense. None of it made sense. But it reminds me a lot of Sherry Papini's, you know, ruse that she had been abducted. And so she obviously planned to leave, as I believe Dr. Melanie Litt also planned to leave. But when I do think about this relationship she has with this guy, I do have to wonder if there could be some sort of coercion, in the sense that maybe she is manipulated and brainwashed by this guy, similar to how Lori Vallow Daybell was kind of manipulated by Chad and his whole cult belief, and I don't know, all the weird stuff that he was spewing. So I don't know, I just see parallels in some of these stories, and as we learn more information, that opinion might change. But as of right now, I just feel like it's eerily similar. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, if you agree or disagree, or just what your thoughts are on it in general. I do post about all of these stories typically on Facebook or on Instagram. So if you want to interact with me on there, or leave comments on these stories, then you can do so there. Or you can go to momandmystery.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and there is a box where you can send me a private message, but make sure you say who you are, otherwise I will not know. So on to the next story. A small town in Texas is reeling after beloved Alvarado High School teacher Chelsea Spillers was found murdered in her home, and police say the man responsible was her own husband. 33-year-old Chelsea Spillers, a well-loved biology and chemistry teacher at Alvarado High School, was found dead inside her home, and police now say the man responsible was her own husband. It was the morning of October 18th when officers with the Alvarado Police Department were called to perform a welfare check at a home on the 200 block of South Spears Street. Friends and colleagues had grown concerned after Chelsea failed to show up for work or respond to any phone calls. When police entered the home, what they found was horrific. Chelsea Spillers was dead, and investigators immediately noted signs of trauma. A medical examiner later confirmed that she died from blunt force injuries consistent with a violent assault. The woman that many described as kind, funny, and patient, a teacher who had inspired countless students, was now the victim of a crime that police were calling a domestic violence homicide. As investigators began piecing together what had happened, one person was notably absent from the scene, Chelsea's husband, Brandon Ashley. Neighbors told officers they hadn't seen him since the day before and his car was missing. Police issued an alert and began tracking his movements across Texas. Within 48 hours, a break came from more than 150 miles away in Badias, a small rural town in Grimes County, just southeast of Alvarado. Deputies there spotted a vehicle matching the description of Ashley's and pulled him over on October 20th. Inside the car, they found a handgun, an Astra 357 caliber revolver, though at that point, investigators had already determined that Chelsea's death had been caused by blunt force trauma and not a gunshot wound. Once deputies confirmed his identity, they learned that he was wanted on a Johnson County murder warrant connected to Chelsea's death. He was taken into custody at the scene, then transported to a local emergency room for a medical evaluation before being booked into the Grimes County Jail. Officials said that the firearm was secured as evidence and that Ashley's car would be processed for potential forensic material like blood, DNA, or trace evidence linking him back to the crime scene. He now faces a murder charge and is awaiting extradition back to Johnson County, where he'll stand trial. News of Chelsea's death spread quickly through the small town of Alvarado, where she had taught science at the local high school for several years. Her classroom was the kind of place where students said that they felt seen and heard. She was known for her enthusiasm, her love of nature, and the quirky energy she brought to every lab experiment. Chelsea Spillers was not just a teacher. She was a daughter, a sister, and a mentor. Colleagues said that she had a gift for connecting with students, especially those who struggled in science, often staying after class to help them catch up. Friends have described her marriage to Brandon Ashley as increasingly strained over the last year. Some recalled hearing arguments, while others said that she'd recently seemed withdrawn or distracted. In Texas alone, more than 200 women are killed each year by intimate partners, according to the Texas Council on Family Violence. In most cases, friends and coworkers later say that they had no idea the victim was in danger. Police say that's why welfare checks like the one that led to Chelsea's discovery are so important. They often start as a simple call from worried coworkers, but sometimes they can save lives or at least bring answers sooner. As of this week, Brandon Ashley remains in custody in Grimes County. Once he's extradited, he'll face a first-degree murder charge in Johnson County, Texas. And as we all know, Texas does carry the death penalty, especially for those first-degree or capital murder charges. That is it for this week's Weekly Docket. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode. If you liked this episode, I'd be grateful if you shared it. And as I said before, please make sure you are following this show wherever you listen to your podcasts so you never miss a future episode. I'll be back on Tuesday with another deep dive. Until then, stay vigilant, stay curious. Mama Mystery out.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.